And good afternoon, Tri-States, and welcome to this edition of your radio magazine, Voices of the Tri-States. Today we are talking federal issues. Joining me by phone, I have Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. And Senator, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here today.
Once again, I'm glad to be with you in Dubuque, Eastern Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, and of course, Senator, because I'll tell you what, you have been in the news a lot lately. I don't know if that's a good thing necessarily or a bad thing, but the Supreme Court decision, and that has put the spotlight on you. Sometimes I would imagine before we start talking about issues, sometimes you must be thinking, boy, did I really bite off more than I can chew, or do I really want to be on all these TV and radio shows?
Well, I've got to be on these radio shows because you and press and TV are part of the mediums of our communicating with people, getting people's opinions, expressing our views, encouraging people to participate in the process of making laws or not making laws, nominating people or not nominating people. So you have to do it if you believe in representative government. I suppose I could be a senator and not do all this, but I enjoy doing it. I enjoy discussing people, questions, and you always ask good questions.
Well, thank you, Senator. I appreciate that, and we appreciate you as well. In fact, if we don't have you on, I always have to tell folks when your next time will be on. So let's start out with that Supreme Court vacancy. You had a meeting with the president. How did that go?
Very cordial.
Oh.
Considering how controversial this issue is, I think it was unexpectedly controversial, with the meeting starting out with the two of us that are Republican senators speaking the position of 52 of our 54 Republican caucus members who support letting the people speak on the issue. And the president stated his view that he expects to send a name up in a few days, or he probably said a few weeks, but it won't be long. We'll have a name up here, I'm sure. Expressing our view that we have a shared role with the president called advice and consent, and that consent can be voting for a nominee, it can be voting against a nominee, it could be withholding judgment, and our point of view at this time is to withhold judgment and let the people speak in the election so that you have campaign rallies, both Republican and Democrat, and then you have national televised debates where what kind of a person you're going to put on the Supreme Court is a major topic of discussion, and even more importantly, the role of the Supreme Court in our constitutional system is a subject of debate, because there's a lot of people in this country feel that the courts, particularly the Supreme Court, has gone to making law instead of interpreting law. And that's not true just of Democrat appointees. That's true of Republican appointees as well. And then during this period of time that President Obama's put people on the court has gone down from an approval rating of about 50% down to an approval rating of about 28%. And then our judgment to put it off is not just a Republican judgment to put it off, although that would be a decision right now that we're making. But then we refer to the historical precedent when there were, maybe wasn't really a vacancy, but Democrat members of the Senate suspected there might be a vacancy in a lame duck presidency. So we had Senator Biden, I think it was 1987, then we had Senator Biden, 1992. Then we had a Senator Schumer, 2007. And we had a Senator Reid sometime in there, all expressing views that if there's a vacancy, when a president's a lame duck, that would the people should have a voice through the election. So we think that we're right from a constitutional standpoint. We think that we're right from a historical standpoint, and we think that the president should have a voice.
Senator, you mentioned this, and I know that other folks have brought this up as well, the issue of perhaps this appointment should not be for life. Is this something, as I recall, this is in the Constitution, is this something that people would even consider changing and bringing this up so that it could be changed?
Well, you'd never change the Constitution in time to do this, but I don't have the article number, but it says he, meaning the president, shall have the power, and he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint judges of the Supreme Court. And so we're saying the president should have a voice. The people should have a voice. In other words, that the people vote, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I told you the last time I said this, the president mm-hmm. have a voice. The people have a voice.
Right, everyone. You know, and you're absolutely right, Senator, in the sense that it is an election year, and if you want your party's person to nominate someone, that is your choice, and hopefully more folks start going out to the polls and start making that choice. So we will kind of stand by as time goes on here then, Senator, and we'll see how everything shakes out. I want to switch gears, and one topic that has come across, I guess, almost like wildfire across the country, this opioid abuse and heroin use epidemic, and talking about possibly doing something about that on the federal level.
Yeah. It's a bill that's been on the floor today. In fact, within the hour, we're going to have votes on four amendments on the bill. And I think maybe by tomorrow, the bill will become law if the president signs it. Well, it's got to go to the House of Representatives. So it'll pass the Senate tomorrow. I don't know exactly when it'll get to the president. But don't forget, it was one of the subjects that we discussed with the president, and he was very much in favor of the bill. In our meeting yesterday. We have such an epidemic that 44,000 people died in the last year that we have records for. That's more than people killed in automobile and crime, gun violence. And so it's a large number. Now, we have a problem in Iowa because we set up a special heroin tax force. But I don't know whether I'm hearing about it being as big of a problem in Iowa as what we hear from New England senators. And this bill is pushed primarily by New England senators. It's a bill that came out of my committee by a large bipartisan vote. Well, it came out unanimously, so it was bipartisan. And it's going to spend $400 million this year, $100 million more than last year on the opioid epidemic. And I think we'll get this legislation passed, and I think the president will sign it. If I won't go into too much detail, but it's probably a pretty comprehensive approach that involves education, substance abuse, law enforcement and interdiction, and those sorts of things.
And I think, Senator, and maybe this is a separate bill, there was something on there, too, about interstate placement of children in foster care, that if children are with parents that are addicted or in prison or something to that effect, that that's a part of that bill. Am I thinking correct?
You know, I have a separate bill on that subject to hasten adoptions across state lines because there's so much paperwork. And between states, the paperwork gets lost. So that may be what you're thinking of, mm-hmm. Of a separate bill that I have in on that subject.
Okay. Also, Senator, I want to talk about some proposed legislation requiring the Obama administration to provide unclassified notice to Congress on the coming on specific information on individuals that are currently detained at Guantanamo Bay and why they're being transferred to a foreign country. I guess I did not realize that we had some of those folks from Guantanamo Bay now being transferred to other countries, but apparently there has not been a very much of a transparency on this issue.
I would support that legislation. I'm not sure I know the details of it. You may have expressed more details than I know. It's not something that's up for vote right away, but the intention's very good. And to bring you up to date, starting in the Bush administration, when we had 600 or more people at Guantanamo, and now it's down to, a hair less than 100, I believe. There have been transfers over a long period of time, people that were considered to be mentally changed so that they weren't inclined towards terrorism, in other words, safe to let out. And maybe a lot of those have proven to be the right judgment, but we think maybe 20-25%, sometimes I hear a little higher percent, of some of those people released go back into the war against the Western societies, the United States, Europe. In other words, they join the terrorist activities, the jihadist activities, and they are a threat to the United States. Some of those people we have specifically killed once they rejoined the forces, but I don't suppose we get a very high percentage of them. So the bill you're talking about is Congress trying to keep on top of whether or not these are the type of people that are being released, should be released. Now, you aren't going to release the top 15 or 20 most dangerous people that were involved in 9/11 and things like that. But this administration wants to release more people. And so Congress ought to know more about it, is what the bill's all about.
Okay. The Guantanamo Bay itself, is it still the push to shut that down? Have we heard anything?
Oh, yeah. The president put out a plan last week. I don't think he has the legal authority to do it because Congress, for 6 or 7 years, have passed amendments to appropriation bills saying that he couldn't shut it down. But yet he puts out a plan because, you know, his attitude is he's got a pen and a phone, and if Congress won't, he will. But this is a case where he didn't even ask the Attorney General for his authority to do it. And the Attorney General, I think, was quoted as saying that we're going to follow the law. Well, the law is that, that Congress doesn't want to shut down, so the president can't do it. And even General Counsel to the Secretary of Defense, so the Secretary of Defense has said the same thing.
I know, Senator, earlier in the interview you mentioned the meeting with the president was cordial, and I suppose there's always an agenda to those types of meetings when you are sitting with the president, but do you bring anything like that up to say, you know what, Mr. President, we're elected as senators and congresspeople to do our jobs. What gives with all these executive orders?
Yeah. Well, I brought it up this way. Probably not more than 2 minutes did I take to say this, and I think the president did most of the talking, so there wasn't a lot of time for the rest of us to talk. But as we were leaving the justice issue to go to opioids, he said, Chuck, do you have anything further you want to say? And these aren't my exact words because I don't take notes on everything I say, and so I'm paraphrasing Chuck Grassley from yesterday to the president, something along the lines, we've been talking about whether or not you ought to name a justice. I said there's something more basic to this conversation and this dispute than what we've been talking about here is. And I said, Mr. President, you have a view of the role in government that's a different than our view of the role of government in society. You believe you have a pen and a phone and you can do anything that Congress, if it doesn't do it for you. And I said, and then you want to have judges that back you up. And I didn't say about the packing of three additional judges on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals because they review his executive orders and regulations, so he wanted more liberal judges on there when they aren't even needed. And I didn't go into that detail, but I said, you want a court system to back it up. And I said, I guess I implied, I don't know whether I actually said it, that the courts have to be a check on this sort of unconstitutional activity. So that's how I brought it up yesterday.
Okay. Did he have any response?
No. Then before I put a period on that last sentence, I said, here's where we are in crime sentencing. Sentencing reform. Mm-hmm. And then we went into sentencing reform, so I didn't give him an opportunity to respond. And I think if he'd wanted to respond, he probably would have. But he probably knows that he has a different view of this than we do, so he can't deny that. Because he says, I have a pen and a phone, and if Congress won't, I will.
Yeah, Senator, I think we're all taught in our maybe elementary, if not there, junior high classes about the checks and balances in our federal government situation here in the United States.
And this guy's a professor of constitutional law at the University of Chicago, and you just wonder whether or not he really understands the Constitution.
Very interesting, Senator. And again, folks, I want to remind you today we are talking with Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. And if you do have a question for the senator, you can give us a call here at 690-1370. We do have a call coming in, Senator, right now. We have Nils on the line. And, Nils, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, Senator Grassley, I'm sure that you're familiar with Cates' Law.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if that's going to move forward. Or instead of being attached to other bills, if at some point it could come up as a standalone, so we can get this thing passed. And
I'm going to give you my opinion, and then I'm going to tell you that I don't know exactly when it's coming up, but we've already tried Cates' Law connected with other immigration legislation, and that was a judgment made by the majority leader of the Senate. And we got a majority vote, but we didn't get the 60 votes to proceed. So that should not be tried again. Cates' Law should stand by itself. And you probably know that the person that's behind Cates' Law is Bill O'Reilly, and he's advertised it well, and he's advertised it standalone. And I've told him it should be standalone, but Senator McConnell's going to make the decision when to bring it up. Now, I can tell you that there must have been some thought of bringing it up just before Christmas, because you have to have 16 senators sign what is called a cloture petition to stop debate. And I signed such a petition, and there was some anticipation that it might come up at that point, but it never did come up. So I don't know where it is right now, but every time I get a chance to bring it up with McConnell, I'm going to bring it up. And there's a lot of other people feel the same way I do. One thing, even if it's brought up separately, unless we can embarrass at least six Democrats into voting for it, so you get 60 votes, and they don't want to take up any immigration legislation that isn't what you call comprehensive, and they see this as immigration legislation, even though it's criminal law, you know, but they see it that way, and so it's pretty hard to get a bipartisan agreement to bring it up, but we're going to keep trying. We have to, because you can't have people being deported from this country five times, coming back in and killing a 32-year-old girl. If you do it once, you ought to be sentenced to a minimum of 5 years.
And now would be as good a time as any, I guess, to bring this up, but some new concerns, I guess, from the administration on that H-1B laws that, again, we are unofficially, you know, getting the blessing to kind of brazenly go around some of those things.
Well, yes, that's what we call the hacking law, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I can describe specifically how the game works, but universities bring in people H-1B, and then these people come in presumably because the university needs them. And then they go out and set up their own business, and that's a way of getting around H-1B. But I can give you a dozen different ways people are cheating on H-1Bs. We need to reform it, and that's what Senator Durbin and I are trying to do. So the people in Illinois, that Senator Durbin's working for their interests, too, on this subject.
Had an interesting one I saw here, Senator. In fact, I think it was a news release came out of your office. The Director of Naval Intelligence, this Vice Admiral Ted Branch, is still at his post, and even though he has not possessed the required security clearances for more than 2 years, how did something like that happen?
Because the Defense Department thinks they can get away with almost anything.
Wow. Senator, it just amazes me. I mean, this person is obviously in this huge role, and yet we don't have this security clearance. There's apparently nothing that can be done about this.
Well,
or can there?
Well, I'm doing what I can from this standpoint, that I have written with another senator a letter to the to the Defense Department to try to get to the bottom of it, and I hope getting proper publicity for it, and I don't know how much publicity we got, but if we have, maybe between the press and between my oversight work, we can do something about it. But how can you be head of defense intelligence if you can't see the secured information that your people are gathering for you?
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Well, let's talk about there's a bipartisan bicameral bill that would give small businesses relief from some of these penalties under the president's health care law if they continue to keep their employees with the health, you know, their health care costs. Let's talk about that on the health care front with that health care reform bill. What's happening? Are we still able to do some tweaking to give some folks some help out there?
Okay, I need to know, are you talking about Obamacare? Are you talking about?
Yes.
Well, and it deals with small business?
Yes.
Oh, yes, now I know what you're talking about. I have a bill in on it, and people that are violating that law can be fined $100 a day, and all they wanted to do previous to Obamacare was help their people buy insurance. Then Obamacare rules that out, so they can't do it, and if they continue to do it anyway, then they're going to be fined $100 a day. Well, what you do is you can't help your employees. Your employees can't get health insurance, or if they get health insurance, they're not going to get any help from the company. They go to the exchange in Obamacare and then get their health insurance that way. And unless they're part of the subsidy, they're probably paying a prohibitive amount of money to have their family insured or themselves insured.
Wow. It is pretty amazing. In fact, I saw and it must be one of the new little features of the bill there, that there is actually a tax that's on my personal health insurance that it says, and there's a little thing on there on the bill for the health insurance that says health care reform or something like that. So I must be now paying into the system, even though I've got my own health care, but I'm being somehow, there's some kind of a tax that's going on to my health care.
Well, now, I hope not. Let me explain to you. If you have health insurance,
mm-hmm.
then you get a form from either your employer or from your health insurance company that you actually have health insurance. And presumably the health insurance meets the requirements of Obamacare.
Right.
Then you file that with your insurance and you don't have to pay the tax. But if you don't have that proof of insurance, then you are going to pay, the first couple of years was only a few hundred dollars, but I think it gets up to $700 or $800 if you don't have insurance. In other words, if you want to go naked, you pay that $900. And you pay it to the IRS.
But I have to do some further investigation. But yeah, I have full health and everything's been turned in.
Well, as long as you turn in, because the United States Senate or the American taxpayers are my employer, and I have Blue Cross, and so I get this form, and we just file it with our income tax. So I think you better find out that you got the proper form, or else you will be assessed that $900.
Right, absolutely, but there was a little something on there, and it was on the insurance bill itself, and so I thought, well, maybe this is part of the...
Let me tell you what that is.
Okay.
Obamacare passed in 2010, starting, I think, immediately, that the health insurance company has a tax on your insurance, which is then passed on to you, but the company's paying it, but you know how it is.
Right.
Corporations don't pay taxes. People pay taxes.
Absolutely.
So you're paying the tax. They want you to know that amount of money is going to the federal government, and you're paying for it. It's just a way of informing you.
Okay. To let me know that part of that bill, that's what that's all about.
Yeah.
So I want to talk just a little bit, Waters of the U.S. rule on farming. Is there anything new on that, Senator?
Well, yesterday, or maybe it was Tuesday. Well, Tuesday was yesterday. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals decided to hear the case, and I think that the administration got the Sixth Circuit to hear the case based on its merits, which came after the Sixth Circuit Court about a month ago put an injunction against Waters of the U.S., and normally that would go back to district court to be heard, and then if somebody wanted to appeal it, go back to the same circuit. And then if you want to appeal it, it's eventually going to get to the Supreme Court, where it's eventually going to end up anyway. And I think what you read yesterday is that the government wants to skip the hearing at the D.C. or at the district court level and have it heard immediately on whether the injunction ought to be released or whether it ought to continue in the same court that issued the injunction in the first place. So right now, Waters of the U.S. is held up. It's officially promulgated. It's officially part of regulations farmers have to follow. But because of this court injunction, it's not being done right now.
Okay. Well, one last question here, Senator, as we follow our presidential campaign going on. Any thoughts on Super Tuesday yesterday?
It looks to me like Cruz very much enhanced his position as maybe being the last one along with Trump, and Rubio maybe lost some ground. That could be made up if Rubio carries Florida in a couple weeks, but Trump seems to be in the driver's seat. Will he be in the driver's seat forever? This is an election you can't predict anything. It's so phenomenally different than other elections, both in the Republican and Democrat presidential races. It's almost like when I come to a story in the newspaper about the primaries, don't bother to read it because there's nothing new. It's just, and it doesn't follow any pattern of previous years. It's history's being invented.
Okay. Well, Senator, as always, I appreciate your time here, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again next month.
Okay, goodbye.